I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tech Magic. I am your host, Kathy Hackle. This is the podcast where we talk about gaming, technology, innovation, spatial computing, AI, you name it. We're talking about a lot of different things happening in the tech space. And as always, I am joined by my amazing co-host, Lee Keebler. Lee, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I didn't think you were going to be in town today. You said last week you were going to be gone, and I wasn't really sure. I was just like, I guess I'm doing this, but I'll just talk to the void for a little while or something. And then you showed up, which is great.
Well, this might be my AI. Do you know it's really me?
Ooh, I don't like that question.
Well, my AI is not wearing makeup today, so... So I don't think my AI would show up without makeup. But anyway, she would show up all glammed up for sure. No, I didn't go to Abu Dhabi. I had some family things come up. So sadly, I didn't make it to the Culture Summit. But I'm hoping I'll be there next year. Heard great things from folks that were there. I mean, John Legend was there. A whole bunch of folks that I know. It seemed really interesting. So I'm hoping to make it next year.
And you got South by Southwest coming up too,
oh,
right?
Yeah. So I'm actually heading over to California in a few days. For a good friend's wedding. He's from the industry. And a lot of us in the XR industry are going to be at that wedding. And then we're all going to go to South By right after. I think we should have just rented, like, you know, done like a charter because we're all literally almost all on the same flight, which is hilarious. We're all kind of heading over to South By. At South By, I'm doing a keynote on the XR stage on spatial computing, AI, and the future of wearables. So future of personal tech, all those sorts of things. Very excited about it. It's a whole hour. Well, 45 minutes, but I'm super excited to be doing it. It's going to be a really good talk. And just thrilled. I think it's such a good year to be there from an XR perspective. The XR track is bigger. I'm only there for a couple of days. So I already have tons of meetings. I'm also leaving time for serendipity because you always run into random people walking around.
Scheduled
a few dinners that I've been invited to. Greg Kahn, who's been on the podcast before, he has AI Trailblazers. I'm doing that dinner with them. Excited about South By, excited to see a lot of things there. It's just a fun event. And I went to school in Austin. So for me, it's always fun to go back.
So it's great when you can like kind of get a little bit of a reunion tour or something.
Well, talking about college, I turned 21 in college, and this is episode 21. Episode 21 of Tech Magic. Can go to the bars now.
We can drink now. Yeah.
We can drink. Yeah. Cheers to that, Lee. Cheers to that. We're 21 now. I still can't believe we're 21 episodes in. I'm so excited.
Yes. This has been a fantastic run, and it doesn't seem to be stopping. It's been a blast every single episode. At least I hope I've gotten really good feedback. And I love getting that feedback. So like most of it comes through like LinkedIn or people that I've not met who have reached out and have just been like, this is a fun podcast, and they like the balance, the dynamic, because I think I'm a little too negative.
The good cop, bad cop situation that we've got going. I love it.
You say all the things that we're thinking, but then she says all the nice things we want to be true.
That's the diplomat in me. My dad was an ambassador, so I grew up very diplomatically.
My dad was a middle school teacher, and he was a shop teacher, so he just said it like it was, otherwise his kids would lose a finger.
So it's a good balance. So a few things, I'll share a few things from the weekend. I always share stories from the kids. Took my oldest kids to see Dune 2. That was super fun.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah. Oh, I went to the movies yesterday, but I haven't seen that one yet.
It was I walked out like that was a movie. That was a lot in one movie.
It's hard for a sequel to like keep up too.
Because I felt like the first Dune movie, like it was kind of slow and then some stuff happened, but then it was like not a lot. Yeah. Not a lot in the desert. At least not so much in the desert had happened. This one's more in the desert. Super fun. My kids enjoyed it. There were a couple scenes that I was like, okay, that probably wasn't good for my kids. But you know, they're almost 13. One of them is 13, the other 12. So I'm like, it's interesting parenting. They really enjoyed it. They were like, wow, mom, this was so good. And my son was like, he hasn't read the books. So he's like, I can't wait to read the books. So he's really
into
it.
It's always a good motivator to see.
Cause he's reading Lord of the Rings right now. So my kids they read a lot. They're voracious readers. So now he's like, I'm going to need to finish Lord of the Rings to get on Dune. I'm like, okay.
I went and saw American Fiction yesterday.
Such a good movie.
So good. Oof. Crazy good film.
Crazy good.
Mm. Hilarious. I laughed at the most inappropriate times in that theater.
Yes.
I loved that movie.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I don't even want to say anything about the movie. Just like
go see it or rent it. It's on Apple TV as well because I watched it when I was in Barcelona.
You can while it's in theaters, you can get it on Amazon because I didn't put two and two together. But since Amazon, I guess, owns MGM, they just have it in theaters. I'm going to say this. I actually think it's a movie you should watch in theaters because of the subject matter and the comedy and the humor. I think that it's important to see what a group of people laugh at when the jokes hit. It was a very interesting because it's a very funny film
because I could imagine people holding back laughter at points. Yes. So I was like, that might not be a good part for me to laugh about this.
It was a very interesting film to like watch the sociology of it all come together.
Well, the acting was fantastic too. I have to say,
so good.
Such a good movie. I mean, I watched it alone because I was like jet lagged and I was like, okay, I need to watch something interesting. I was laughing by myself in Barcelona, but very, very good movie.
I think anyone who writes gets a little bit more out of it. Mm-hmm. But man, it was so good.
It was good, especially you with a fiction book. I could totally see that.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's a whole scene in there where I'm like, I've been there. I have legitimately.
Oh no! I love the part where they're talking about the title of the book and they change it. Yes. Oh my gosh,
it's so good.
I was like, especially I think when you name your book, like even if the names of my book are business books, right? So it's always not super sexy or exciting.
Sure.
I was just thinking about that. Like the naming of the book is such a process, and they make so much fun of it there. It's hilarious.
It's a process. The whole publishing, idea is a process. And I'll say, I think, like, as someone who's a writer, yourself as a writer, in watching this film, never touch into the subject of like AI generated blah diddy blah blah in literature is really valuable. Like, it's not even a subject matter. It's just like, no, people are going to continue to write and write scripts and write entertainment because that's what humans do, is they create art. No machine is going to make that stop because that seems to be a constant drag of a conversation that I keep hearing over the last 2 weeks. And I'm honestly getting tired of it.
I know we're going to get into that a little bit, but I wanted to mention something that really struck me this weekend. So when I took them to see the Dune movie, Dune 2, one of the ads at the theater we were at was for the army. And it didn't say at the beginning it was for the army. It just had people doing things and talking about and changing your life and all this stuff. My son turns over to me and says, Mom, is that an ad for Microsoft Copilot?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I don't think so, honey. I think it's an ad for the army. And it was so important, like such a moment, because I'm like, he saw the Microsoft Copilot ad during the Super Bowl, which is like, I can do or I can achieve. And the fact that in his mind, he thought this was a Microsoft Copilot ad instead of an army one. I was like, damn, that's deep. Like,
yeah,
I was
yeah, there's a layer there.
For a couple of days. I was like, that is intense that that's what he saw, right? Is like, AI gives me the superpowers to do X, and the army ad is like, we can change the world, we can save, you know, all this. Like, it was a really interesting juxtaposition. I don't know. Good that and bad. I had good feelings about it and a little weirded by it too.
And it kind of gives you a little bit of a shiver.
Yeah, I'm like, why co-pilot? I'm like, whoa, it was interesting. But that was his reaction. I said, Mom, is that an ad for co-pilot? I was like, no, I think it's an ad for the armed forces.
Yeah. Oof. That's deep. I don't know. I didn't see the ad.
Yeah, if you see the co-pilot ad, like the one they had from during the Super Bowl.
Sure.
If you see it, and then if that's the only type of ad you've seen and you see the army ones, right? Like, I understand why he made that relationship. Mm-hmm. But it was really interesting because, like, I would have never said this is a Microsoft Copilot ad. I knew it was an armed forces thing, or like, you know, let's change the world, or, you know, we make you a better man, or like whatever it is, like, you know. So yeah, it was really, really interesting. We'll include links to the two ads in the comments so people can kind of just judge. But it was very telling me. I was like, wow, this truly is, my kids' generation is truly a generation that is growing up with AI being ubiquitous. Like,
sure. Yeah. I mean, and we kind of grew up with the dawn of the internet, right? Like, yeah. I technically can barely remember a world without dial-up internet, right?
Yeah.
But I really don't, if I'm being honest. I can't recall much. I don't remember a world without computers, and I barely remember some fleeting childhood memories of not having, I think it was Prodigy dial-up internet in our house or something like that.
Did you have a fax?
No, we didn't. My parents were school teachers, and for whatever reason, teachers had like early access to internet back in those days. So we had internet in the home pretty early. It was very slow dial up. They had a scanner. They were like one of the first people to have a scanner. It was like super high tech back then. And the scanner would allow you to send a fax through the internet.
Through the internet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we didn't have like a fax line or a fax machine or anything like that. But we had that. And that just seemed at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So futuristic to be able to scan a document and see it on your computer screen. That was just insane.
So we had a fax because my dad was a diplomat. So he had to get fax cables and all that stuff. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of friends, international friends from moving all over the world. And one of my best friends was in Germany. So my dad would give me one fax a week to send to my friend, and she could send a fax back. But it was magical. Like, I would write it in my, like, in pencil, like, and I would decorate it and all that stuff, you know, like all these sorts of stickers and everything. And I would fax it, and like, she would reply soon in fax. It was just magical to me as a young person. Like, I was like, wow, this is so magical. But I'm like, now a fax? It's like, where would I even go to do a fax? Like,
well, you still hit that problem. Like, try to buy a house, and they're like, oh, we need you to fax this information to you, like, for your mortgage.
Who has a fax? I mean, you could do it on your computer, right? But like a fax? I'm like, I don't know. People that don't understand what a fax is, was a machine. I mean, it connected through, that was just the telephone line, I'm guessing, right? And it would send, I don't know. It would send, like, it would scan. I remember it would scan the letter I would write, and then she would get the exact same letter but printed out in fax paper, you know, with no colors. So I don't know, it seemed magical at the time. But yeah, fax machine was an important part of my childhood.
now here's, did you ever, this is just like the only piece of like fax trivia that I know, just the fax.
You always know trivia. So
Abraham Lincoln could have technically sent a fax to a Japanese samurai.
How? Wait, no. Are you kidding me? No, you're kidding with me.
No.
No? No, come on.
The fax was invented like in the late, let me look it up, 1843. Samurais stopped existing in 1867, and Lincoln died in 1865. So technically speaking, Abraham Lincoln could have sent a fax to a samurai.
Oh, gosh. A technicality there. Technically could have. Yeah, I was like, no, that didn't happen. That sounds like
story. But he could have. He could have.
Someone should do an anime about that. Like, yeah.
That I would watch that.
I would watch that. Yeah. Crunchyroll. There we go. anyway, let's get into it. I think one of the big things we want to talk about today, where everyone's trying to make sense of this. I got interviewed last week by The Observer on why are so many layoffs happening in gaming? tech in general as a sector, but this specifically was about gaming. It was right after the news that Sony was closing down, laying off a percentage of their workforce, closing down their London studio, which I knew a couple people that worked there. And it was the day, the news, the interview with me on The Observer, which we'll include a link to, came out the same day as news that EA was shutting, was doing layoffs as well. I don't feel like it's stopping. I continue to see more news on gaming layoffs. Why, in your perspective, and I'll share mine, but why, in your perspective, do you think this is happening?
Well, okay, I think part of it is I think layoffs are always happening, especially in the tech sector. Like, it's always been that way. I think it's getting way more press because I'd have to go back and like find it. But I saw an article recently that was like 80 people are getting laid off from blah, blah, blah tech, like game company. I'm just like 80. We're talking about, I mean, that's a lot of people if the company's like 100. But when you start looking at, you know, some of these really large thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you know, at a studio, I guess it, I don't know. That just doesn't hit like the 900 that Sony laid off, or like 1300 coming from another company or whatever. And it's not happening across the board everywhere, right? Nintendo has not announced any layoffs. In fact, the CEO said, if we do hit a down part, I'm just not going to take a paycheck because that's going to demoralize my team and I need them making good content and good games. I do think to an extent that's why Nintendo is special. Because
but there could be layoffs.
There could be.
I mean, there's no Switch coming, so I don't know.
Well, there is a Switch coming 2025, but not right now. Mm-hmm. Right. Not right now. And who knows? They might miss that date as well. My personal suspicion was we were supposed to have one years ago, and that's when the OLED came out because we were just in the middle of like this COVID can't find supply chain issues, right? But here's the difference. Nintendo owns Nintendo games. They own everything from Mario to Metroid to, you know, Legends of Zelda, like all of these franchises they own.
Yeah.
Sony, they have exclusive titles, and I think they own probably a couple of like interesting IPs. But by and large, they're mostly licensed brands, even if they're Sony produced video games, right? Like they don't like have a,
Spider-Man.
Like Spider-Man or
because that's what Insomniac Games had been working on. Games.
So. Same thing with like Last of Us and things like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's all of these games that are like unique to the platform, you know, to the Sony PlayStation, but they don't have the IP stranglehold that Nintendo has with Donkey Kong and everything else in between. And so one of the things that Nintendo is able to do, even with I mean, like, look, the Nintendo Switch came out in 2017 and it was underpowered when it launched. We all saw that. But so did the Game Boy. When the Game Boy came out in what, 1989, it was not the most technologically advanced, you know, handheld on the planet. But it didn't drain your batteries like the Sega Game Gear did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it had Tetris, which was just infinitely a better mobile game at the time. So when you look at, like, what they're doing with the Nintendo Switch right now, as they're re-releasing, they've re-released, like, 3 archived games in the last 2 months. And I've bought all 3 of them because I grew up playing those games.
Because you grew up playing,
I grew up playing them, and they're great. They're games that I
Nintendo reigns supreme in my house, I'll tell you that. My son didn't want a PlayStation 5.
And I think that's the other problem is PlayStation with Sony, because of maybe supply chain or maybe they were trying to game the market. They tried to get, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You couldn't get a PlayStation 5 until people just gave up. And so I don't know that many people. It's a console that is now reaching the end of its life cycle. And I actually don't know that many people who have one.
There you go.
And I'm in the gaming space. So like, I kind of get it. And you have to have that if you're going to have the PlayStation VR, like their new iteration of their VR stuff. So there's just a lot of misses that seem to be happening.
So I think it's part of that. I also think it's a few things that I shared with this reporter. I said, well, also a lot of these studios that are laying off people are canceling titles that haven't even come out because maybe people, you know, sometimes it takes years, as you and I have discussed in the podcast, for one of these AAA games to happen. And you know, it might not even be a hit. So things related to that, the amount of people required to do some of these games, the length of time required to do some of these games. I think also you know, mobile gaming versus console gaming. I think that there's also economics there. I know, I mean, console gaming is still very, very hot and very active, but there's something to be said for mobile. So, so I definitely mentioned that. I also think when you start to,
There's something to be said for PC gaming too.
Oh yeah, yeah, PC gaming.
And I think that that's an important thing to call out, because a lot of these titles can just be played on your PC. And it's hard to, if you're building a computer for like maybe your work, or like you're a graphic designer, or you're getting into video editing or whatever it is that you want to do, and you build the PC that you need to do that stuff, even if you're in high school, like, and that's a goal for you, well, that becomes your console. And if it doesn't have that exclusive title, it doesn't have that exclusive title. Money's tight, right? So I think that plays a part into it.
Well, the conversation she and I had also had to do with NVIDIA. And I said, NVIDIA's before graphics cards, you know, graphic cards for gaming used to be one of NVIDIA's main things.
Yeah.
Now
yeah,
it's yeah, not. Yeah. Now it's like, you know, GPUs and everything, but like in AI chips, like their focus is has moved from gaming being kind of their main focus. That's what I meant. Like when I first got introduced to NVIDIA, it was because of that. We needed those graphic cards to do, to run the Vive.
Yeah,
1080s and stuff, right? But obviously that has changed. So even that has evolved. So she asked me about that. She said, like, what about like NVIDIA and their business model?
Well, I think the NVIDIA business model, like, yeah, it changed, and it definitely took a weird twist when like the cryptocurrency craze kind of like skyrocketed.
Oh my gosh, I remember that.
2017, 2018. Yeah. You just couldn't get a graphics card. And anyone who was like scooping them up, they weren't scooping them up to do gaming or 3D graphics or whatever. So I think that that was one of the big lifts, but then the everything just kind of like twisted and turned until it morphed into a value for a GPU. The GPU was always like the secondary processor, up until about 2015 for most people. Most people would go out and buy a PC and never even update their GPU because they weren't out there playing the most heavily graphiced games, and there was no VR. But now things are a little different. It's changed, and people want to like have multiple screens hooked up to their computer. They want to have their VR headset tethered to it, and in or whatever, right? So I don't know. Like NVIDIA, I think, just created a marketplace for the also necessary processor.
That's a good point.
And that's just
different. That's a good point. Yeah. Here's something that she asked me about. She said, what about Twitch? Layoffs at Twitch. And I said, well, this is what I'm seeing at Twitch. It's, you know, there's this, like, there's long form content, there's short form content. You've got, for example, someone like Pokimane, which we've talked about, leaving the platform, Twitch, going somewhere else, or quitting entirely. A study conducted by TikTok recently stated that TikTok is the number one platform for finding mobile games. So that, in my perspective, could be eating into Twitch in some ways, right? Stealing some of Twitch's thunder. Thoughts?
I think Twitch kind of has its own issues where they... You have this whole like weird system that they're trying to put in place with ads, and those advertisements are a little bit too, you know, too bullish. I think YouTube's making the exact same mistakes where it's just too intrusive and you're quite literally pushing people in the wrong direction. If your ads are ever pushing, are so intrusive that they're pushing for people looking up like how to do ad blocks who normally wouldn't do that, you've gone too far. And I think that that's going to be this continually growing problem, especially in the streaming space. You also have monetization issues. If the streamers do not feel like the audience they're bringing to your platform, they're being properly paid for or compensated for. That's an issue too, because I mean, like, what in the world would happen? You've explained the hype around Mr. Beast and what all of that means, but what would happen if Mr. Beast left YouTube, right?
Like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
But that's not impossible, right?
If it happened, I mean, MatPat, there's plenty of them that are stepped down. So
So, you know, any of these things can happen. And when you do that, you lose large groups of viewership. And part of it's probably just a lack of management. Like, I just found it very strange that Twitch, owned by Amazon, had this whole goal of just being gaming focused now owned by a company that's just not gaming focused, right? Like that's just not part of their history. Maybe it is one day. I know that they bought the CryEngine and they kind of dabbled a little bit, but then they got, I don't know, they got bored with it or something and walked away from it. So like, it's, there's just not a big cohesive.
That's interesting because most of the people that I used to know that worked at Amazon Gaming are gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that seems to be, I'm not saying it's not on their radar or in their wheelhouse. I'm sure someone's working on it somewhere, but I'm not seeing active news of progress on that topic. The other problem that they have is like, they've got some, how do I put this? They've got some not safe for work problems.
Oh, right? Yes.
And and I don't like, that's a liability. And then you start getting into people's opinions on what censorship means. It's just a hairy mess of a problem to like, I don't really want to unpack that.
I don't know.
it is part of it, right?
Well, like, it is that's part of it. Yeah. No, so. I agree. But maybe they should go to AllFans or something. They just open your AllFans page, do that. What I would say also, I also mentioned something to Heather. I said, from the other side, you've got big media companies, you know, the Netflixes of the world, you know, HBO, like all these Max or whatever, right? Whatever they're called. now kind of starting to give gaming the place it deserves as one of the biggest industries out there and bringing in IP. But with that, you have people leading these companies going into gaming and gaming IP that are not gamers or don't understand gaming culture. And this is Andrew Rosen, who we're going to have on the podcast, ill-suited to be running some of these, you know, some of these divisions. The difference here is someone like, I would say, like Mike Verdu, who's been in the gaming space for a long time, including Facebook, and now is at Netflix. So I think
this
there is also
not, that's not new, right?
Like, but it's concerning because they don't understand
concerning.
It. They don't understand.
History repeats itself.
Which is sad. We let's should push for change.
We should, but let's hop in the time machine, okay? Set the flux capacitor to 1976. We're going to go to Sunnyvale, California, and we're going to watch a young Nolan Bushnell sign the rights to Atari over to Warner Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Warner Communications, 1976, buys Atari. They buy all of the intellectual property comes with it. That's Asteroids. That's Yar's Revenge. That's all of it, right?
Yeah.
And subsequently run it right into the ground. That was the beginning of the end for one of the largest video game brands ever in existence. Now, anyone who's under 30 years old is listening to me talk going, Atari, I kind of heard the name before, but like, no, you don't understand.
You don't understand.
Atari was Nintendo. Atari was Xbox. Atari was Sony, all wrapped into one. That company was the video game god. Like,
all my first gaming was Atari. Like, it was all an Atari. Like, we only had Atari at that point.
There was Atari and everything else. And and Warner Brothers was like, hey, we can get in on that. Warner Communications bought them but what did it do? It gave opportunity. As these companies fail to adapt or understand, it creates opportunity. And that's where we get companies like Activision, right? Activision came out shortly after that acquisition because all of the developers left Atari to start Activision because they weren't being treated properly by Warner Communications. That's the history of it. Y'all can leave and go do your own thing and then own it. And then look at the history of Activision. They've survived long enough to watch themselves become the big massive beast and become, you know, is
and
that
get
what
acquired
is that? Like,
and now are laying off people, even though they said they weren't going.
If you live long enough to watch yourself become the problem or the enemy or something like that. Like, but they did. And Nintendo was this pretty obscure arcade cabinet manufacturer in Japan that used to sell playing cards. But they saw this opportunity. They tried to release the NES with Atari. Warner Communications botched that deal up. Like, it's all there. So this is not new, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is we've been on this.
But by this point, I wish these companies were really trying to hire the right people to run these things. Like, when it comes to gaming, like,
I don't know if they can.
Well, it's a case of old media versus new media, I guess.
I think it's a case of old people versus new people.
That's a good point.
I mean, when you start looking at some of these really large companies and you start looking at who they hire to be leadership, and I'm not talking C-suite, CEO, but to an extent I am.
Yeah.
They hire people that there's like articles written about that have been in it for far too long. They don't hire the youngest, new, fresh minds because they haven't proven themselves. I understand that. they have to answer to shareholders and investors. That, I think, is what's causing a lot of this.
Well, that's what I also said to the Observer. Like, the shareholders are reacting positively to this. So they're going to continue doing layoffs because shareholders are liking it. So I said, sadly, we're going to continue to see more layoffs. I don't see that stopping. So I mentioned that. I also said, and this is where I think we're going to get into a really interesting conversation with what you and I had talked about before we hit record, is that I do feel that there is almost that wait and see attitude of what could generative AI and AI in general do to gaming. Like, I know, like, this is top of mind for both of us.
It is, yeah.
AI, the things we're seeing about AI or being said about AI, the people around us, how they're starting to feel about it, especially our game developer friends. Can you share a little bit? Because I think you and I had a really interesting conversation.
I got a phone call last week, or really someone reached out to me on Discord, one of the people that I work with. Young guy in his 20s, and he's like, hey, Lee, can you jump on a call? And he's never asked me anything like this before. Can you jump on a call? I think I'm having an existential crisis, is what he says. And I'm just like, okay, yeah.
And he's not the type of person that I would see doing that. Like, yeah.
No. And so I jump on a call with him and we chat for a little bit. And it was just like, okay, graduated college, focusing in the gaming industry. He wants to do X, Y, and Z in the gaming industry. And now his LinkedIn is just full of AI is going to make everyone lose their job. And the threat, the constant threat of that noise had really eaten into the back of his head and gotten into his psyche. And I cannot blame him for that because I know better because I'm old. I've been on this rodeo before, but I do see it and I have to admit it does kind of affect me too, but not in the same way. It makes me angry. I try not to let stupid trivial things like crap on LinkedIn make me angry, but this has gotten to me to the point where I just want to like rattle some cages. This is what I told him though. I was like, you have to leverage the tools you have for the art that you want to create. And as long as you're creating art, then there's not a computer that's ever going to take that away from you. And I mean that. Like when I was in college 20 years ago, I wanted to work at a recording studio. Like I was in the music industry. I wanted to work at a recording studio. And, if I didn't do that, I wanted to work at a radio station. Like those were my career goals. Right. Yeah. And this is right at the beginning of like Pro Tools coming out where you could record music on a desktop computer. And then once I hit through college, you could record it on a laptop if you had a couple $100. And everybody in the industry was saying the exact same crap that I'm reading on LinkedIn right now of the music industry is dead and you can't do this. And this, I mean, we're talking, it was like the early 2000s. I'm reading this and I had that moment, but then I was like, wait, this means I don't have to actually like go empty ashtrays and like kiss up to rock stars, you know, to get into the music industry. I can do it with a laptop. I can do it with a couple plugins. And what it did is it blew the doors wide open on the music industry. And sure, there aren't as many recording studios out there anymore because there doesn't have to be. And that's okay. And then while I did work in radio for a little while, it became very obvious with the invention of a little addition of a small company called Pandora that wasn't going to last very long. But in my career, that still led me to go work with the Black Eyed Peas and help build their recording studio. I still was able to do it because of the stuff that I did that was innovative with the tools that I was giving. I got used to the idea of radio broadcasts, and now I'm doing a podcast with you, which is really
audio, which is radio in some ways.
It's the same thing. It's still the same still conversation that I would want to have if I were doing talk radio. And none of that got disrupted. My world didn't get destroyed. My opportunities grew as opposed to being stripped away, which everyone who was older than me promised was what was going to happen. And they were all wrong and they're wrong again. It's just nightmare.
Well, there's a lot of fear mongering. I think there's a lot of fear mongering.
Yeah.
I think we can't be naive. There will be job replacement. There will be some job replacement like it is with every other technology. Yeah. But is it like, we're never going to do movies. We're only going to watch movies made from Sora. Like, I'm like, I don't know. Like,
no.
There's always going to be room for the Kia and the Ferrari. That's what I think. Right, you know, right. we're even theater. I think like theater is going to have a comeback.
I think theater will have a comeback. You know, there's content, there's art. And like, I still have an interest in knowing about my favorite actors, actresses, writers, you know, directors. Like, that still's a thing. I want to see their work. And that has nothing to do with, well, AI could have done that. So what? So what? Who cares? If anyone's telling you they're shutting their stuff down because AI is going to take it away from them, then they don't deserve to have it to begin with. They don't believe in themselves. They don't believe in themselves as artists. They don't believe in the people around them that they're trying to invest in. Those are not people who deserve the platform they currently have. And yes, you know exactly who I'm talking about. And I do not make any apologies for that. Oh, don't be a coward.
Woo! Goodness gracious! Get off the soapbox, Lee. It's 100%. In some ways, I definitely agree with you. In some ways, I don't. But I will say, this is another analogy I gave to someone. I said, "Look, if the idea is that AI is going to replace everything, like the shareholders are going to like it really a lot right now, but eventually, there's going to be no money for anyone to buy. If everyone loses their job in a hypothetical future." Then no one's gonna have any money. And they're like, UBI. I was like, well, yeah, but that's not gonna cover your Netflix. You know, that's not gonna cover all your subscriptions. Yeah. Like, there's not gonna be any disposable income for people to kind of buy what there's the things that these companies are creating that the shareholders so want to benefit from.
You think those shareholders are gonna give us UBI? Come on. Like,
yeah, no, exactly.
Like, that was like, that's a whole like, other UBI, can of worms like, yeah, we don't have time for.
Yeah, no. it's a great concept, but yes. But I was like, if everyone's out of a job and no one has, you know, any disposable income, then what is the future here? Like,
no.
The shareholders, like, they're going to have a lot of money, but they're going to have to move to their bunkers in Hawaii. Like, I'm just, I don't know. It was this,
and that's
this
lonely.
Kind of like interesting spiral that we went down. And I was like, no, like, they're like, but UBI, I was like, that's not going to pay for your like gaming and your subscriptions. And
did video games break the board game industry? No.
No.
So stop it.
Well, you know who wrote a really good op-ed? Jaron Lanier, who, you know, he's like...
I really, really respect that guy.
And it's a great op-ed. I think it's New York Times. He talks about how to see AI in a different perspective. I also think Roni Abobitz from Magic Leap, he has been having... I listen to his podcast with Charlie Fink and Ted Chilowitz sometimes. XR, This Week in XR. And I've been a host there. I've been a co-host with them a few times. And he's got a really interesting perspective, like on the type of AI he's working on and everything. So yeah, I think that we need that balance. You know, I think it's really easy to get caught up in all the drama from Silicon Valley and these AI companies and the valuations and, you know,
all Elon of the people
talking about Altman, like suing Altman, AI, and then Castle Ventures getting involved, Vinod Castle getting involved, and then Andreessen Horowitz. It's like watching the real entrepreneurs of Silicon Valley as opposed to Real Housewives. But it's like this drama. I'm just like, okay, take a step back. Take a step back, Kathy.
All right, you lost me Bravo. On that. That's hilarious.
It is. It does feel like that. It feels like, you know, it's like, ooh, drama. Like, who's going to throw, you know, some serious shade here on X. But yeah, like, don't get caught up on that. Focus on, you know, for me, it's like, use the tools if they're useful to you.
Yeah.
You don't have to learn to use every single tool. Like, do I need to learn how to do music editing with AI? No, that's not what I do. Right.
No. And it's not going to stop songwriting because will it kill some songwriting? Yeah. It'll kill the bad songwriting. And will it produce something that's good? Yeah, I'm sure. I'm certain. I guarantee you that it will. But is it going to wreck Taylor Swift's, you know, regime? No, of course not. That's hilarious. Like, that's just not, I mean, I've listened to a couple of her songs and they're starting to sound kind of familiar, and maybe she's already doing it. I don't know. but her following's not going away, right? Like, there's just a
Swiftie's
deeper...
Swifties got a Swift. They will continue.
Yeah. It's just such a silly thought, and it might disrupt, like, storyboard artists, I guess, maybe.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to disrupt makeup artists. Like, there's certain things that, yes, I definitely think that there is going to be impact there, right?
Totally.
So I think, like I said, we can't be naive and say there's no job replacement, though there will be. But I think that there's a balance there. So don't get caught up in all the real entrepreneurs of Silicon Valley drama.
Please. Yeah, don't sell your dreams out yet. Like, there's still something to go
after. It's heartbreaking when you told me about that. I was like, because I know the young man, and I'm like, man, the fact that
but you can see see where it comes from.
Yeah, like, the level of anxiety. I'm like, and I understand why someone would question themselves. I mean,
sure,
I would be lying if I said I haven't at one point said, well, what does this mean for the future or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Of me doing X, Y, or Z. So,
And what I said was, stop asking what it means mm-hmm. for you, like as it's affecting you, and start asking, wait, what does this mean I can do now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a different parallel to what I've been seeing anyone say.
Yeah.
I
will tell you, there's a really good episode in the AIQ podcast that we did, the first one with Jenny Nicholson, and she talks about, like, this truly is about superpowers. Like, she's never felt more powerful. And I thought it was a really interesting, different side of the paradigm of, like, yeah, these are powerful tools. If you're using them and you learn how to use them specifically for what you love to do, they can be very powerful. So, okay, I think we should go on break. And then when we get back, I'll tell you all about my, my experience meeting Kara Swisher. So we'll go to break, and then we'll come back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
All right, Lee. So let me tell you about something fun that I did last week that I didn't include at the beginning, but I think it's relevant to our listeners. Because I think we have certain listeners that listen to this also listen to the Pivot podcast with Kara Swisher and Professor Galloway from Box. And Kara Swisher's new book, Burn Book, A Tech Love Story, came out last week. It's been reviewed everywhere. Like, you've probably seen it. Like, it's been everywhere. Kara's been everywhere. She's been on The View. She's been reviewed everywhere. Like, amazing. She lives in D.C., just like I do. And she had one of her book tours was at Sixth and I, which is, like, a really famous place here in D.C. And this time around, it wasn't her interviewing people. It was people interviewing her. So New York was Don Lemon. Here in D.C. was Laureen Powell Jobs. And, there's Reid Hoffman, a whole bunch of people are Sam Altman. Like, a whole bunch of people are doing the book tour with her, which is really interesting. The one in D.C. was really, I don't know, it was really intimate and nice. And, her ex-wife was there. Her current wife was there. Like, it was just really cool to see all these people in one place and then hear her perspective. She talked a lot about the book, her experiences. To me personally, Kara is like one of my North Stars. I have two North Stars, which are really interesting. Two women that are my North Stars. They're both very different, but like if I can combine what both of them do in some way, like I will be a very happy woman. I will die happy. So one of them is Kara Swisher, who's a journalist. Mm-hmm. She's an entrepreneur, very, very successful. I look up to her. We actually share the same agent from UTA. We're both represented by our same agent. So
yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's like how I feel connected. and I said that to her when I saw her. I was like, oh my gosh, we have the same agent. So that was really cool. And then the other one's Amy Webb, who's an amazing futurist. So like if I could combine both of them into one person, that's who I would want to grow up to be. But it was really nice. I got to meet her. She signed one of my books and got to chat a little bit with her. Very interesting. She did say something interesting during her talk that I had read before, was that within a couple of days, there were all these AI copycats of her book on Amazon being sold.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like Burn Book, A Tech Love Story. Mm-hmm. It was like Kara Swisher. Like, and they had like AI generated images of her, like all this stuff that someone would think it might've been her book or it could be a book related to it or something. So when she was on stage, she addressed that and she said, she called Amazon. She was like, what's going on? Like, this is not right. And of course, because it's Kara Swisher, they brought some, like, took some of those down. She mentioned Savannah Guthrie as well. She has a book about, like, God and identity and stuff like that. And someone created an AI workbook. And people are buying her book with a workbook, not realizing that it's not hers, right? So that to me was super interesting. Her perspective, I mean, she's a tech person. She's been in the tech space forever. The fact that this is impacting her, like, her book's still selling, you know, super well, bestseller and everything. But the fact that it hits that close to me was, I don't know, just super interesting. So
it's going to be a continually, I think it'll be a continuing problem for Amazon specifically, because they've got such an easy, low barrier to, like, self-publication, which from all aspects that I can tell is, like, majority of it is automated, to the point where, and honestly, you got to be kind of like a weird book nerd to know this, but like, I'm a Stephen King fan. And last week someone had realized, this was on UK's version of Amazon, that there was a book that was, it looked exactly like Stephen King's upcoming short story, like, collection of short stories called You Like It Darker. But the title, same cover, same title of the book, but at the top, instead of saying Stephen King, it said Stephen's King.
Oh, so sneaky.
And I think it's been, like, taken down, and it was, like, pretty quickly, like,
but I'm sure
found.
They made some money. Like, whoever that person was.
Yeah, whatever. Well, whatever it was. It's not there anymore. It's long gone. But it was one of those things where it's like, oh, some people are out there trying to figure out, and you're going to have that anytime where there's an automated system, people are going to try to figure out how to game it a little bit.
Even with my books, like, there's Summary of Kathy Hackle, Dirk Luth, and Tommaso Di Bartolo's Navigating the Metaverse by Everest Media. Like, this is nothing I ever authorized. Like, no, like, yeah. Like,
that's
stuff like
you.
That's maddening to me. Like, that's.
I wonder if I have a book out on Amazon yet. And I just don't know it yet.
Just be prepared. When it comes, you're going to be all these copycats. AI. Well, it's like, you know, it's like pink slime. It's just like this constant revolving of, like, crappy content that, you know.
And this is part of, this is part and parcel to the AI conversation as well, because, like, I'm starting to see it in comments, just on, like,
oh my
posts.
Gosh, on LinkedIn. It's to me, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. Anyone who utilizes Reddit understands what it means to see just, like, reposting bots who, for whatever reason, they're hyping up an account so they can use it for whatever reason later. I don't know. I think it's something that, it is one of those things that I think a younger generation is becoming desensitized to, but it's like our generation is having a hard time still parsing the difference, which makes me feel kind of old, because it's like when I saw, you know, garbage pop up on Facebook, I didn't understand why the generation older than me was struggling with it, because it seems so obvious. But now I'm kind of in that seat and going through the same thing. It just keeps going and going.
Well, I'm seeing it on LinkedIn, and I actually read an article on, like, business media, like, how to automate your responses on LinkedIn. And I'm like, no, using AI, right? And I was like, no, these are the worst. Like, now, like, I'm going to be honest, like, I'm a super user on LinkedIn, right? I love LinkedIn. I post all the time. Now I'm like, every time I go in and I'm like, is this response generated by AI or is it generated by the actual person? And now I'm starting to be like, should I even reply? Like, it's this weird thing. And I think people might have noticed that I'm not replying as much. I just...
I
feel a little like, I don't know.
Well, I've even seen, like, when they have started selling premium AI solutions as part of their premium package, where it's like, would you like to rewrite this
with AI?
Post with AI? And I'm like, well, doesn't that go against what I'm, like, I'm here to prove what my thoughts are? Like, it just seems so antithetical to what LinkedIn's one major selling point is, and that is showing the professional capabilities of the person behind the keyboard. If you replace all of their content with a premium status that can just write it in AI, well, one, I have a feeling it's all going to start looking the same for a little while. But two, then if I hire that person, aren't I going to be real disappointed when I find out, like, that person is, I don't know, an idiot?
That's where I think, and this got me to thinking about that. Like, I think one of the big things in the future is going to be curation, of the things that has worked for me, right, because I have this WhatsApp channel with over 2,500 people. And I can't add anyone else, sadly. I need to talk to WhatsApp and Meta and see how I can, because lots of people want to join. But the big thing there, the value, is the curation, because people are like, oh my gosh, you share news that I didn't expect, or instead of them going to hunt for the news, I can say, this is a really good read, or this is why you should read this, or this is why it's relevant, or hey, surprise, we're landing on the moon. Like that. Like, someone was like, I had no idea we were landing on the moon until you put that on your group. So, so I think curation from that perspective, you know, curation is going to be important. I think podcasts like this, where there's a conversation, a smart conversation by two humans that are smart,
at least
it's me today, not my AI, about a relevant topic for that audience. Right. So yeah, I do think that there's still curation. There's, you know, quality content, like things like that are still going to have a place. So,
yeah, we're not at the dawn and age of max headroom at this point. We're not there yet. I don't think we're ever going to get there. I don't know. I just believe too much in people believing in people. And I'm willing to die on that hill.
I'm still just, team human.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I don't really care what the computer says.
Yeah. I love computers. I love spatial computing, but yeah, I'm team human. As a human, I want to engage with technology in more natural ways. And I think that that is what spatial computing will bring to the market, to it. But
totally agree.
We'll see. I know we also wanted to talk a little bit about wearables and some of the rings and all the things that are happening. Some of the news there.
I'm a big fan of the ring.
Would you wear it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah? Totally. I would.
Why? I have a hard time doing that. I have to be honest.
I don't wear a watch. Mm-hmm. I don't wear pins. I don't wear a necklace. I wear a wedding band. Mm-hmm. And I wear glasses. And I typically am wearing a hoodie. So if you can cram technology into one of those things, you're not disrupting my life. I probably would replace a wedding band, because it sounds weird to say, I would replace a wedding band with a wearable technology wedding band, but I probably would, right? Like, I don't
I think your wife would be totally down with that. She'd be like, yeah.
I honestly don't think she would. I don't think she would care. We're not big jewelry people. And maybe if we're going out to dinner or something, but by and large, it's not something that we ever really think about. I'm probably going to find out Wednesday after she hears this podcast.
Report back.
We'll see. But it's a practical solution for something that I think people naturally would wear. When I see pens like the Humane pen, I'm like, cool, I get where this is coming from, but I don't wear a pen. That's just not typically what I would do. So I don't know. I'm more in line with the ring than probably anything else. Even more so than glasses, because I don't even wear glasses 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I don't either.
If you can fit it into a ring and it's just doing standard biometrics, that would be great.
For me, it's got to be such a beautiful ring for me to put it on, to be honest. I wouldn't just wear a ring out of utility. Maybe I would. I don't know.
The ones that I'm seeing look pretty sleek. They're fine, but they do look like a wedding band.
I need a little more.
I agree with you. And I do want to see what they look like in person, because the thing that I always worry about is, does it look too big or too clunky? It's why I don't wear a smartwatch. The last smartwatch I owned was the Pebble Time Round, and it doesn't exist anymore. It hasn't existed for a decade, because it was an actual thin wafer e-ink display, and it looked like a watch. Everything else that I've seen in this, by and large, does include the Apple Watch, is they're just too thick, and they are these chunky discs on your wrist, and they don't look right.
I don't wear an Apple Watch. It's weird. Yeah. I wear AirPods, though. I wear AirPods all the time. When I'm
But that's a different thing.
And I feel like, AirPods, if they would do more with wearable. I could definitely, Huawei had this, these AirPods that look like earrings almost. They were really pretty. I was like, I could. It actually had a big thing outside the Mobile World Congress Center. It said blah, 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 fashion. And it had these I was like, oh, interesting. That looks fashionable. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I would like to see more tech, actual tech, biometric tech go into shoes. You know, there's just areas that we haven't fully tapped into yet, especially when it comes to like athletic wear, athletic shoes. The materials are getting super sci-fi, but we're not putting anything in them. And that just seems a little like,
well, you're in Portland,
weird.
So go talk to
Nike. I know. And I keep hearing whispers, right? Like I literally live next to Adidas, like US headquarters.
Adidas. Yes.
And, you know, and
for
and
a European crowd, it's Adidas. There.
You know, so like I hear the whispers, but we've just not seen it yet. It's just all about materials and light.
I mean, they're starting to do NFC chips, but that's obviously not what we're talking about. We're talking more about like sensors and
We'll see. Interesting. But I'd do the ring. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, awesome. So before we go to Dispatch from the Fringe, there was a really interesting topic that you brought up. I think is really relevant, especially for anyone here listening who has kids or kids in their lives, or you know, or teaches or anything like that. About some of the things that are happening with AI and teenagers. So do you want to share a little bit on the story?
No. I don't want to. This is so scary. Like this, I feel like this is the type of story that's better like used for like the Halloween episode. It scares me so much.
Yeah.
I don't feel, here's the thing. I don't feel qualified to have an opinion on this because I don't have kids. Mm-hmm. But I mean, effectively it is, there's this constant problem there recently at a school in Beverly Hills where there was a ton of bullying that occurred because other classmates were generating AI generated photos of classmates naked in the nude.
Yeah.
Not safe for work, suggestive pornographic content. And even though I can barely remember high school myself. And I don't have kids or even like nieces and nephews who are in high school. I still panicked and was just like, what damage are we hurtling towards? And we're not having the right conversation.
Yeah.
So I sent that to you.
Yeah.
And was just like, I wasn't even sure we should talk about this subject.
Well, no, I think it's very relevant and it's a reality. Like that's one of the things where it's definitely a horrible use of the technology that can impact lives and impact children and lead to very negative outcomes. Right. Because even with my kids, like they're middle school, we're starting high school next year. Mm-hmm. But even in middle school, like they have all these classes, like their technology classes where they talk about, you know, everything you do on the internet lives forever. Like, you know, they know these things, right? They know like anything could be a screenshot. Don't think it's going to disappear because anyone can take a screenshot, like all these sorts of things. They know these things. But when it comes to something like this, where it's not even them doing something.
It's out of control.
Like it's out of control. Like they can't, and it can impact at a level, I think from a psychological perspective, at a giant level, you know, the amount of bullying and things. And like someone that doesn't, like they don't even create this. Right. It wasn't even like,
They didn't do anything wrong.
They didn't do anything wrong.
All they did was exist.
Or it's been misguided. Like they didn't do anything. So,
right.
So, I mean, I feel so uncomfortable with that. Like we've been very late at, like giving our kids phones. Like my oldest, she's 13. She literally just got a phone. Like I'm that type of parent, even though I work in technology, I'm like super like strict.
Sure. Because you know.
Yeah.
Because I'm
like, I don't want them, you know, the algorithm is like, no. So like they don't, like, for example, my 13 doesn't even have social. She was just asking me, can I get Pinterest? It's like, okay, let me think about it. I think I'm okay with that, but let me just double check, make sure. Right. Yeah. But yeah, like it made me think a lot about my daughters, even my son. I remember reading something about young boys on Snapchat being scammed, you know, and stuff like that with, you know, girls asking them, saying, hey, I'm so-and-so, send me a picture and stuff. And then it wasn't them and like all these sorts of things. And I worry.
And that's something you can like guide someone through, right? That's a teachable moment.
Yeah, it's like, don't send a picture, right?
Yeah, here's what you do and you don't do. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, there's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do. But then there's the angle of the fact that these images, if they have the face of that person.
Sure.
And that person's a minor. Like it becomes a child porn issue, right? Which I think.
I don't know if, okay, so like legally does it? I don't know.
I don't know. Like, as a parent, like, I just, it's a sexual because image it's of a child. Not,
yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
Is the body honestly, of that of a child? I don't care. I don't know.
Right,
I guess,
right.
You know, maybe we should get a legal expert because that's a big question mark, a very sensitive thing.
Incredibly sensitive, incredibly, terrifying. You know,
in that case, what is the responsibility of the companies that allow for this to be created and the platforms where these things are shared, right?
Right. And so the problem that I've got on this particular, you know, soapbox is now a lot of these AI companies are fighting to say, well, the ownership of like what the company outputs really that legality relies like should lie on the person who writes the prompt. And I'm like, no, it don't. No, like that's the
person that writes
happening.
The prompt doesn't necessarily know what they're getting. I mean, they know the intention behind what they're writing, but...
Right. I mean, and this is more like along the lines of like the New York Times lawsuit with OpenAI. You know, this isn't as something as dark and as scary as what we were just talking about. But to me, that also proves that we're having the wrong argument. Like everyone is so worried about like the New York Times, you know, their intellectual property. And I'm sitting here like, you want to win this argument? You got to go over here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's a deep and dark, scary hole. But this is the argument that you win. We'll get to this stuff, but it doesn't really matter.
Not over here. Yeah, you're right. It's interesting because like in Kara Swisher's book, she talks about a lot of the things in tech and like unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Like tech always has those unintended consequences, right? And this is one of those where I'm like, if that is the future, that is a hellish future.
Yeah.
Like it's already bad with social and like stuff, like the things I hear, you know, but adding that layer of AI and that layer of what, you know, I don't
adhere to all of the fear mongering around AI, but this scares the crap out of me.
No, this is scary. Like, I agree. This is the scary part. This is the dark, dark part of it.
Yeah. That should be. I don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I do think we probably should go and find like a legal.
We should, yeah. I'm going to find someone. I know a couple people here in the DC area that are definitely in the AI space and thinking of the legalities of it and stuff and try to get some answers because especially for anyone listening to this that has kids, you know, whether they're young, whether they're in high school or have kids in their family or what have you, or works in, you know, in an education setting. You know, and I'm going to ask some of my friends who are high school teachers. Like what they're seeing. I'm gonna have a conversation with them. I've had tons of conversations with them about social, but like TikTok and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
But about this specifically, I think that this is something I'm gonna ask them about if they're seeing anything happening.
And they may not yet be like this is so new. And I mean, really, the first article I'd ever seen breach this topic publicly was last week. With this high school in Beverly Hills. But
I do think the explosion of what happened to Taylor Swift then has definitely opened this door.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, look what I can do with this. And I can, you know, ruin people's lives, literally.
Yeah. So. Fun conversation. Thanks, Kathy.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. What a way to end the podcast. Episode 21. Anyway, let's go down to Lily from Dispatch from the Fringe. She's going to talk about how Wi-Fi sensing became usable technology. So Lily, take it away.
Hello, Kathy and Lee. Welcome to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe. Today, I'm going to talk to you about Wi-Fi sensing technology. Now, Wi-Fi, it does pretty much all we need it to do, connect us to the internet. But what if it could do something more? Wi-Fi sensing technology interprets the physical properties of electromagnetic waves. However, not the encrypted data they carry. So in an article from MIT Technology Review, it's the idea that the same routers in your house that bring you the internet could also detect your movements. Quote, thanks to better algorithms and more standardized chip designs, it could be invisibly monitoring your day-to-day movements for all sorts of surprising and sometimes alarming purposes. So Wi-Fi sensing technology, because of the different wavelengths it has and how big they are and how far they travel, can track your breathing, monitor your falls, and it could even make buildings smarter by knowing where the people are. Of course, think of all the nefarious ways that someone might use this technology. However, To work, Wi-Fi sensing needs to look at how waves from multiple devices interact. And that's something that's still a wait and see in our homes. Smart light bulbs, our routers, our other internet-connected devices could eventually work together to see where people are and how they're doing. One company, Origin Wi-Fi, is looking to do just that, specifically for elder care or people who live by themselves who might need someone to check in on them from time to time. So Origin Wi-Fi looks to use Wi-Fi sensing to transform smart homes into intelligent home ecosystems. It's not just about the internet anymore for internet service providers. It's about enhancing security, health, and home safety, according to Origin Wi-Fi's website. So what do you think? Do you want your router to be able to sense where you are and your family members in your home? That's something that could happen. So thanks for tuning in to this week's Dispatch from the Fringe.
All right. Well, that was really interesting, Lee. You know, Lily always has the fun stuff. She has such a fun job. I want her job.
She does. I love that story so much because it invokes like how we can manipulate technology in like ways that we weren't thinking of. And it kind of makes me think the Matrix is real, right? Like it just kind of was like, maybe all this Wi-Fi is just seeing like the code of the Matrix and that's how they're tracking. You know, it strikes the science fiction part of my brain when I read that stuff. It's like, oh, that's really
okay,
cool.
Quick question. Are you Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, Lord. I'm Back to the Future.
You know what? I am Back to the Future, too, now that I think about it.
Yeah,
because someone was asking me that the other day. It's like, I grew up more around Star Wars because my brother was a huge Star Wars fan, but I aligned more with like the idea and the concepts in Star Trek, but I never really watched that much Star Trek. But I'm definitely a Back to the Future person. So there you go.
I think there's category. The third. If I had to pick, I'm probably Star Trek Next Generation. Mm-hmm. That was definitely
I'm much more aligned with that vision, like, and I've seen episodes and like the technology and stuff.
Yeah.
More so than Star Wars. I grew up more around Star Wars because like I said, my brother was a huge fan. He's still a huge fan. I don't know. We'll see.
My
kids did ask me, they said, did Dune come before Star Wars? And I said, actually, yes, Dune did come before Star Wars. Because they were like, this reminds me of Star Wars. I was like, well, let me tell you a story.
long ago in a galaxy far, far, far away.
All right. On that note, thanks, everyone, for joining us for Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. We'll hope you join us next week. Thank you, Lee.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hats because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.